BBC.
Now on the BBC World Service Sporting Witness, and this week we look back to 2001 when a group of Tibetan exiles and a Danish ex-footballer teamed up to create the Tibetan National Football Team. Robert Nicholson has been speaking to Michael Nybrandt and team captain Sonam Wangyal about their first ever game.
It's June 2001. And Radio Free Asia is broadcasting live commentary on the first ever international football match involving the Tibetan national side. They're playing Greenland in Copenhagen, but it was a fixture that very nearly didn't happen.
The match actually took place was like a sort of a small miracle in my book.
Michael Nybrandt was a semi-professional footballer in his native Denmark. He had a dream to create a football team to represent Tibet, a place he'd come to love. After several months of negotiation, a team had been pulled together and a date had been fixed. But at the last minute, the Chinese government, which steadfastly refused to recognise Tibet, threatened to boycott shrimp exports from Greenland. Michael took his appeal to the Chinese embassy in Copenhagen.
I actually went to the meeting with the ambassador and I said I had a phone call from CNN and BBC. And they wanted to come to Denmark and do an interview and they wanted to use this case as a proof that China interfered sports and politics. And I saw the ambassador, he was sitting at the end of this long table, he was starting to sweat a little bit, and he said, what do you want me to do?
And the interviews you mentioned with CNN and BBC, were they real or were they a bluff?
That was a hoax, because I was quite desperate.
It had been a long journey to get to that point. The Tibetan team was not drawn from within Tibet, but from the large community of Tibetan exiles who'd been forced to flee their home country and had found refuge in India. Among them was the team's captain, Sonam Wangyal.
Football was a very, very big and important part of the Tibetan society back in India. We didn't have boots and cleats, and we played around with whatever we could, but there was always a passion for football.
Had you thought about it, the idea of a Tibetan national team, would that have been a kind of strange idea to you growing up?
Never thought in my wildest dream that there will be a day that I'll be representing the Tibetan national team.
And Michael, I suppose that's where you come into the story. You are a student and you make the choice to go to Tibet.
I was a long time supporter of Tibet and I wanted to visit the country myself. And on that trip, there was a few nights where we had to take cover in a ramshackled monastery. And I ended up playing football with some of the small monks there. That night in the monastery, I dreamt that I was coach for the Tibetan national football team. The idea started to take shape that maybe I was supposed to help the Tibetans form a national team.
At what time then did you first come across this big Tibetan exile community in India and start thinking, well, this could be where the football team could come from then?
When I came there and I started to realize that, as Sonam also said, that there is a strong football culture in the Tibetan community.
And did you tell them it was something that you dreamed about, or were you worried?
Yeah, I told them my dream, and actually there were a few people who told me that I should stick to this dream because it's important that you bring that message on to the youngsters, that they shouldn't stop believing in their dreams.
And was there a sense there was something very political in what you were doing, that this was a statement about Tibetan identity, about Tibet in opposition to China to an extent, right? You've got the long history of when China first occupied Tibet, there was an immediate crackdown on football, the destruction of a national stadium. Was there a sense for you that this was a political act, or was it just about football?
It is a combination. Political aspirations, being a Tibetan, will always be there. In whatever actions that you do, you cannot hide it. You cannot defend it. But I loved playing soccer too. So it was a very positive combination of something that I am passionate about, and obviously that goodness or that positivity is now attributed to the Tibetan national team, which becomes a political symbol.
So the team comes together out of nothing, out of nowhere, and suddenly you're training and there's a game potentially on the cards against Greenland, but the conditions aren't particularly easy.
the conditions, the rain and the terrain, you know, everything sort of plays a part. And
and the cows
and the,
and the dogs on the pitch. Yeah,
so a lot of distractions. So we had to maneuver through a lot of distraction and
the monsoon
and the monsoon season.
The Chinese threat to boycott Greenland shrimp exports was a potential economic disaster, but the Chinese were also hoping to host the 2008 Olympics and didn't want a sporting row to taint their bid. After Michael Nybrandt's bluff, the Chinese backed down and the game was back on.
It must have felt prior to that point that you'd made all this effort, you'd made a team, you'd made an international team, that you were never going to get the official recognition of being a FIFA team or what have you, but nevertheless, once you'd played an international game, that wouldn't be something anyone could ever take away from you, and that you would be a real international team once you'd played a game.
It was the first time that, of course, there was an official meeting between Greenland and Tibet, and during those 90 minutes, Greenland accepted Tibet as an equal partner.
It was such an emotional feeling when you got into the stadium, man. All the 5,000 to 6,000 folks who had come to watch the game, and the Tibetans, I could just see their face. It was just that it's ours. You know, we are here to represent our country and our culture and our custom and our history. The feeling that, you know, was unreal when you're in that tunnel and you're getting out and it's all dark and everybody's nervous and the entire crowd is going crazy and wild.
The Greenland team was no easy opponent, particularly as they were coached by Sepp Piontek, a legendary manager who had won top league trophies in Germany.
He was a very renowned coach back in the day, so I knew Greenland was a tough, tough team, but we weren't deterred by that. We were like, hey, we'll give it our best and we'll see what happens.
The game kicked off, the stands at the ground in Copenhagen packed with fans, and even a live broadcast around the world from Radio Free Asia. Then, after 20 minutes, Sonam Wangyal kick-started an attacking move and saw striker Lobsang Norbu stun the Greenland side.
We score our first goal in 20 minutes. The sprint that he did and the timing and the kick that he took, it was unreal. And right after the goal, we were like, what the hell just happened? Like, did we score a goal? So everybody and I was just it was crazy, and we all came out and Michael was at the stand. It was we won for that 25 minutes, and we were up, and but then towards the second half we were all tired, exhausted, and we lost the game 4-1 eventually. But that 25 minutes in that pitch was an incredible moment, and I'll never stop dreaming about it.
The Tibetan national team, featuring exiled players, continues to play in international tournaments today. It doesn't have status to play in the World Cup, but has taken on various representative sides in France, Germany, Turkey and India. They're unlikely to be playing a Chinese side anytime soon, but Michael Nybrandt and Sonam Wangyal are proud of being there at the start.
And I think that afterwards, we celebrated the match as we won the World Cup. I think we ran around the stadium with the flag, and I think 5,000 people, they were just cheering.
You know, it was 2 years of true hard work and preparation. But to us, I think it was 50 years of repression, overcoming that and sort of living that high for 25 minutes, showing the world that, hey, you know, we exist. We love football, and this is what we can do. So it was just a moment of triumph.
Sonam Wangyal ending that edition of Sporting Witness. It was a Whistledown production for BBC World Service.